The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's great to be with you here after a very busy weekend. Lots of talking for me, so my voice is a little grovelly today, but we'll get through it. We've got lots to get to. Coming up at the end of the program, we'll be playing the end of the year montage. Sam has assembled some of the highlights, or maybe you could call them the lowlights of the year. But it goes on for a number of minutes, and it just kind of wraps up some of the big news items that we've discussed on this program over the past 12 months. So make sure that you stay tuned for that coming up later on at the end of the show. Here at the start, I'd like to just update you first on some of the activities that we were able to enjoy over the weekend. Lots of fun, lots of fellowship. Lots of time with God's family, family dance on Saturday evening, and then many activities Sunday morning with tours, the exhibit over at Armstrong Auditorium. I think a few people went down to the Oklahoma City Airport to view the G450. And then, of course, we had a big show yesterday afternoon with all of our musicians, our dancers, showcased there on the stage of Armstrong Auditorium. Just a real inspiration to see so many of these youths, and most of them were high school age, a few from the college as well, but to see so many of these youths that we have literally watched grow up from infancy, and we've seen them perform, so many of them, when they were 6-7 years of age, and now they're 16 or 17 years of age. I can remember one of the first concerts where we saw the fledgling youth orchestra. I think they played Angry Birds, that little app that used to be on phones, the theme song for that. And it was, of course, it was adorable to see all of these young people playing Angry Birds on stage. And it was really pretty bad, all things considered. It wasn't that great, but it was a start. And so to hear the youth orchestra yesterday, and then all of these fantastic soloists, and then the dancers following that. I can remember in the case of my own children when they were starting to dance at 7-8 years of age, and now they're 16 and 18. But we used to talk about what it would be like if we had a full just a whole line of dancers, a dance troupe that could pull off something like what you would see on Broadway or in London or in Dublin. And they did a pretty good job of it yesterday. There were I don't remember how many were on stage with some of the big numbers, but they just looked amazing. And what I'll play for you here, this is an a cappella number that they did. It goes on for about 2 minutes, and you can get a sense of just the rhythm and the beats of this dance performance, where I think there were maybe 12 or 14 dancers on stage. So here you go. You can listen to that first.
Thank you.
So there's a sampling from the show last night. If that doesn't get your toe tapping, what will? As you carry on through your day, you can tap away. But to see some of those performers, as I said a moment ago, some of them working on dance or piano or violin for 8-9 years, it made me think of that. I've talked about this before, that point that Malcolm Gladwell makes in Outliers, how that practice isn't the thing that you do once you're good. It's the thing you do that makes you good. And what we saw yesterday afternoon, it shows just how much can be accomplished over the course of a few years or maybe several years if you're willing to put in the practice. Gladwell calls it the 10,000-hour rule. He said that to achieve mastery in any field of expertise, that it takes about 10,000 hours of practice. And so when you see that accumulation, that's what we saw yesterday, that accumulation of thousands of hours worked at these special talents and skills. Sometimes it's specialized, the training. Here at the college, of course, the specialty, if you can call it that, is in the balanced lifestyle. And I think students can sometimes go through it and think, well, I don't have a really highly specialized skill. But when you put it all together, when you step back and look at the some do have a really special skill in music or dance or whatever else. But even if you don't, to look right across the board and to see just how instrumental the students are in a lot of projects going forward. You look at the balance from Imperial Academy all the way up through the college, all of the liberal arts curriculum. And then the work-study program that the students are able to participate in, where they develop all kinds of skills depending upon what department they are assigned to. But then the many, even if they're not into music, there's all the fine arts engagements, the concert series, the annual formal events. And together with that, and we've seen this more in recent years, well, at least in the last 10 or 12 years, with the opportunities to travel, those that have participated on one of the many Jerusalem digs. And now, of course, you have, in the last 4 years, you have the opportunity, some of them do, to transfer to Edstone for a year or maybe 2 years. And then, of course, the activities, the intramural activities together with that, all of the instruction, too. Let's suppose you go 4 years to the college over the course of 8 semesters. That's a lot of instruction. Students, most of them graduate with 125 course hours to their credit. And I think I did the math a few years ago. I think that amounts to about 1,800 hours in the classroom. 1,800 hours. The time they put in on the job, that amounts to about 4,500 hours. Sometimes the job they have early on is in the kitchen or on landscaping, and then if they stay for 4 years, a lot of them work for television or editorial or mail processing. As I say, lots of experience that's accumulated over the course of 4 years. Additionally, there's something like 1,200 hours for forums and Bible studies and assemblies and church services, sermons that they hear. This is just four years. You total it all up, and the 9,000 or 10,000 hours of instruction, of experience, social occasions, dating, music, whatever it is, you can certainly see why there's so much positive growth. Now, the students have their part. They have to submit to the program, of course. You can come here and kind of resist against it and maybe end up not doing as well as you should have. But those who submit to the program, 10,000 hours of valuable instruction, experience, opportunity. It's a wonderful thing. And of course, what makes it successful, what makes it productive, is if in addition to all of that I just mentioned there, you're diligent yourself. with the hours and hours of prayer and Bible study, personal prayer and Bible study, contact with God and personal Bible study every day, if you're getting that in, you're laying the groundwork for a most productive life in God's family. Every single day, just chipping away at it. I spoke with a woman on Saturday night about the book club. I mentioned a few things about that on radio in the past many months. And along the way, I made the point that if you tackle a big book and you just commit to a few pages every day, you'll be surprised, even if it takes you a year to get through it, you'll be surprised at the progress. And she came up and said, "That's true, and I'm really glad that you said that, because I've just been trying to chip away as I get ready for bed each night, 5-10 pages, and it surely does add up. An hour a day for a youth, an hour a day practicing a trumpet or a clarinet or a flute or on the piano or at dance. You start in with that, and of course children, young people, have the advantage of not having near as much responsibility as their parents. They don't have to go into work 8 or 10 hours a day. An hour a day on a some kind of a musical instrument, or in voice, or with dance. And you add it up over the course of 8 or 10 years, and you get what so many of us were able to see yesterday afternoon. In Psalm 89, my father's been going through the Psalms during this ministerial conference, this psalm that the prophet Jeremiah wrote. And he talks about the covenant that God made with David, and then later on in the psalm, Jeremiah was pretty frustrated and even was in a bad attitude of sorts. And God had to snap him out of that. He was able to snap out of it with his relationship with God, his Bible study. But he says at the last part of this psalm, he's lamenting the fact that all of these tragedies had happened to Judah. And, well, how is God going to keep his covenant with David and preserve that throne and that kingly line? He's talking about just how urgent. Well, as he says at the end, he didn't have much time left. He had the commission to transfer that throne. And later on, of course, he figured out what God was doing and how that was going to come about. But notice what he says in verse 46. He says, "How long, eternal, will you hide yourself forever? Shall your wrath burn like fire? How long? How long?" Well, God's promise was sure, and he did soon intervene after this psalm was written. But Jeremiah says here in verse 47, "Remember how short my time is. Wherefore have you made all men in vain?" Just remember how short my time is, God, please. I don't have that much time left in this fleshly tabernacle. Remember how short my time is. My father writes in the Last Hour book, he says, 1 John 2 and verse 18, I won't take the time to read that verse, but it just talks about the last hour, the urgency of the time period that we're in right now. But it says here, we are running out of time. Don't be misled by the fact that the church is building today. Our building program will only speed the process to get this work done. Things will never return to the way that they were. From now on, we're in the last hour, a time like no other. We will experience the worst turmoil and violence ever on earth. He asks, how do you manage your time? How urgent are you in organizing your time? We all need to get motivated to do more. We have less than an hour left. Spiritually speaking, we have less than an hour. So we really have to carefully budget our time. Every day, we need to chip away at our prayer, our study, our lessons, our reading, our family time, all those things. And try to live the the Armstrong College way of life. Underpinning it all, of course, as I said earlier, it has to be the prayer and the study. But striving for that balanced lifestyle that revolves around God. Continuing on in the next psalm, this one's by Moses. It says, a prayer of Moses, the man of God. Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations, or generation after generation, as it says in the margin. You have been our dwelling place. You are our abode. God's house, God's family. It says in verse 2, before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn man to destruction and say, return, you children of men. For 1,000 years, it says in verse 4, in your sight are but as yesterday, when it is past and as a watch in the night. 1,000 years is just like yesterday. It's like a day. Peter wrote about that. So did Ezekiel. So did Moses. It's just like a day. It's just a little blip on the radar screen. And if that's true with 1,000 years, what must it be like in God's sight? 70, 80 years. That's about all that we have if we live out a normal physical existence. That's nothing. Verse 5, and the Moffat says, year after year you sow men like grass that grows anew, that in the dawn is fresh and flourishing, then by twilight fades and withers. We're just like blades of grass. Year after year, God sows men like grass. God really is active, and he's engaged in what we're doing. He's engaged in his family activities. He really is concerned about you and your growth. And he's obviously aware of just how short that time is. He wants us to make the very most of it. Verse 9 says, our days all droop under your displeasure. Our life is over like a sigh. Our life is 70 years at most, or 80 at the best. A span of toil and trouble. Soon over, and we flit away. Soon over. Those of us who are parents, parents of many of those children that were performing last night, some of them now teenagers, some of them now in their early 20s. We're certainly being reminded each day, each week, each month of just how fast this life goes by, how the time just flits away. It's like a vapor, James says. And so Moses in verse 12, he prays, so teach us. Teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. Teach us to number those days. Teach us to make the most of our days. Help us to understand more deeply how the accumulation of a sustained day-by-day effort, it really can be monumental. You can achieve monumental things if you're willing to put in the day-by-day effort. Together with God's help, look at what God can do. Look at this campus. Look at this work. Look at Armstrong Auditorium. That's been open now for over 8 years. And we can walk in there and take it for granted and just say, well, that's the centerpiece of the campus. We love going in there. It's beautiful, has great acoustics, so comfortable. It's just a real uplift. That's a miracle, that building, that it went up in 2008, 9, and 2010, supported by just a handful of people scattered all over the earth. And here it is, this showcase. This masterpiece, right here on display in North Edmond. There's no other facility like it on this earth. And here it is, just tucked away in these Oklahoma hills. And it's surrounded by beauty and magnificence from one corner of this campus to the other. And, of course, it's the people It's the people, most of all, that fill this campus with life, God's Spirit. What a work that we're engaged in. We all have a part to play. God puts us in the body, as 1 Corinthians 12 says. He puts us where it pleases him. And he wants all of us to put in our time, our practice time every day, whether it's prayer or study or reading or family time or on the job with the children, with the spouse. We can't be wasting away our lives. Walter Isaacson, in his book on Steve Jobs, he makes a point in there how that Steve Jobs, I don't remember why he thought he was going to die early, but he did die relatively young. He was 56. But because he thought, and he thought this in his mid-20s, he thought he was going to die young. And because of that, he really wanted to accomplish things quickly. And, well, I think he definitely did that. Now, that's just in a materialistic world, those accomplishments that he made with Apple and such. But still, you have to give the man credit. While he was here, he was highly motivated. He wanted to do big things. He took advantage of every day, at least in his field. He didn't understand God's truth. But listen to what Steve Jobs said. He said, we all have a short period of time on this earth. We probably only have the opportunity to do a few things really great and to do them well. None of us has any idea how long we're going to be here, nor do I, but my feeling is I've got to accomplish a lot of these things while I am young. Well, we have to accomplish big things for God while we're young, while we're old, while we're anywhere in between. I talked some about this over the weekend in a message. We really want to serve God. That's our objective. We're involved in a masterpiece creation. God's not quite yet finished with that creation, but we're part of it. And as Paul said, we've got to be strictly careful about this life that we lead. We've got to make the most of our time. These are evil days, Paul said. We've really got to make the most of these days that we have. In Matthew 24, let me just read a few verses from this chapter. Matthew 24 and verse 41, it says, two women shall be grinding at the mill, the one shall be taken and the other left. Watch, therefore, for you know not what hour your Lord does come. We don't know when Christ is going to return. As I said over the weekend, we've only got a few years left, most likely. We don't know the exact day or hour, but we certainly better stay awake and be vigilant. We better pay attention to what's happening in the world. We'll be reminded later on in this program of all that went on in the news, the significant events of this past year. Stay active, be vigilant, pay attention. We don't know when this work will come to an end, but it's coming soon. Verse 43 says, but know this, that if the goodman of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore, be you also ready, for in such an hour as you think not, the Son of Man comes. We've got to be ready. If we knew our house was going to be broken into, we would stay up. We would be on guard. We would be ready. Verse 45, who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his Lord has made ruler over his household, to give them meat in due season? It says, blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he comes, shall find so doing. Blessed is that servant who is found doing. He's still working. He's still practicing. He's still refining his craft. He's still serving God. He's endured to the end, as Matthew 24 says earlier on. Verily I say unto you, verse 47, that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. But and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my Lord delays his coming, here's another approach that many have taken. They put far away the evil day, or rather the evil days that lead up to the return of Christ. That's the greatest news. That's the greatest event in the history of the universe. But they put it so far away, so far into the future, and they think, well, it didn't happen in the early part of my life, and now I'm getting older and it hasn't happened yet, so I guess I'm just going to throw in the towel. A lot of God's people have made this mistake. They've put far into the future the Lord's coming, Jesus Christ's return. We can't be that way. In the Ezekiel booklet, it says, when you see the way world events are unfolding, you know an explosion is about to happen. It's only a matter of when. We live in a time when transgressors are come to the full. That's quoting from or paraphrasing Daniel 8. It says, there has never been evil as there is today, and the Bible prophesies that it will all culminate in a nuclear World War III. That's just the truth of the Bible. You can see that same prophecy here in Matthew 24. Great tribulation. My father says, do we have the urgency we need in these dangerous times? He said, I want to help you get God's perspective and to make sure that you are as urgent as the times demand. These times that we're living in, they demand urgency in you and in me. When you see the way world events are unfolding, you know an explosion is coming. That's how that montage ends, the one that we'll play here in just a little bit. It talks about the coming of the Holy Roman Empire. The U.S. is in rapid retreat. And the Holy Roman Empire is rising out of the heart of Europe. Where is this leading? You know an explosion is coming. You know it. And so we've really got to be busy or be concerned about our Father's business. First and foremost, Jesus said, and he had a short life. When you look at it physically, he just lived a little more than 30 years and that's it. But what a motivating force in his life God's purpose was. He really knew. He said, I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day, for the night comes when no man can work. I must have a sense of urgency. I have to finish. I have to finish this work that God's given me to do. That's the approach that God wants for us to take. And we have a perfect example in Jesus Christ, who got up, as was his custom, he got up a great while before the day to get moving spiritually. Some of you get up early to listen to this program, to get God's perspective on the news, to receive instruction from God's inspired word. Mark 1 and verse 35 says Jesus got up a great while before the day to get in his prayer, to talk to his Father. That's where it all starts for these students, these academy students. Even if they're young, even if they're not baptized, they still need to get in their prayer and their study if they want to get the most out of their education. If they're really serious about watching and praying, watching world events, the times that we're in, they really do demand that we have God's sense of urgency. Teach us to number our days, Moses prayed. We only have just a few years on this earth. Remember how short your time is, and go to God for instruction about how to properly number your days. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily radio show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. When we come back, we'll end the program today with the montage that we've put together. News events over the past, prophetically significant news events from the past calendar year. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Well, there's a lot still going on in the news, even though many are on vacation at this time of year. And lot, as I said last week, quite a few stories coming in over or about what's happened this past year. The IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, came out with its report just recently saying that there were 1,000 rockets fired from Gaza into Israel in 2018. Just in the last year, and of course the media, they're ho-hum about this. Nothing to report, nothing to report here. 1,000 rockets. Hamas firing 1,000 rockets into Israel. And Israel, judging by the way the international community always reacts to any kind of fighting back, Israel, I guess, is just supposed to sit there and take it. Just continually being punched and punched and punched and not answering back. Israel, by the way, has its election coming up. Prime Minister Netanyahu, he doesn't really have that many significant challengers from what we can tell. But still, Carolyn Glick, she had a good report in one of her columns about what Netanyahu is going up against, and you can see some real parallels here with what the President of the United States has to contend with. Glick says, but assuming projections are correct, the great challenge Netanyahu faces today is not winning re-election, rather governing after the election will be his greatest challenge. Governing after the election, that's what's going to be the biggest challenge. She says, in Israel today, there are effectively two governments, one elected and one unelected. And as things stand, the unelected government has more power than the elected government. That's Israel. And then look at what's happening in the United States. You have the elected government, that would be Donald Trump, and others, of course, senators, congressmen. And then you have the unelected government. You have all of these judges. You have officials, the bureaucracy at the DOJ, the FBI. Some would call it the deep state. And look at the resistance. Look at the fight that's going on between these two governments. Kimberly Strassel had a piece at the Wall Street Journal earlier this month. She said, powerful House Democrats are about to blitz the Trump administration with subpoenas and investigations. She says, pay attention to their nonprofit helpers, many of which are new. So the Democrats, they've gained control of the House as of the next month, January. And you can expect a lot of subpoenas and investigations. And she says, now make sure you pay attention to their nonprofit helpers. It says later on, the White House would do well to understand that in some ways, these groups are its most potent threat. It's just like Carolyn Glick says about the threat on Netanyahu's government. She says, consider democracy forward. Excuse me. Consider Democracy Forward, which launched last year with a mission of fighting government corruption in court. Sound familiar? The board includes Mark Elias, the Democratic lawyer behind the infamous Steele dossier, and John Podesta, chairman of Hillary Clinton's 2016 campaign. Some of the same players. They've been fighting against the Trump administration from the beginning. And now they're part of these so-called nonprofit helpers, agencies. Strassel says it's a big operation, as these things go, with a staff composed largely of Obama administration lawyers and advisors. And they're mobilizing to resist. They're part of the resistance. And they have all of their helpers in the media. There was that report last week saying that Michael Cohen reportedly was in Prague because, well, we have a phone call now. And as the Daily Caller pointed out, it's here's another report, another bombshell report based on third-hand information. Third-hand information, if you can believe it. Well, the Trump administration presses on. There's a story at Real Clear Politics about some of his achievements this past year, 2018, even as he's fighting against the other government, the unelected government. He says, according to this article, or it says here, about President Trump's year, 2018, he appointed Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. And, of course, the left was furious about that and did everything that they could to try to destroy that man and his reputation. The president, the article says here, he's confronted China. We've seen middle-class wages increase. He's concluded a deal with Mexico and Canada, a new trade deal, which benefits the United States. He ended the Iran nuclear deal earlier this year. And, of course, earlier this year, he also moved the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. He's for the most part, he's crushed ISIS in the Middle East and Syria. He may be making a pretty big mistake leaving Syria, as we've commented on in recent weeks. He's increased jobs for minorities, as this article brings out. If Donald Trump is actually racist, As biased mainstream media journalists often claim, he's remarkably bad at it because people of color have thrived under the pro-growth policies of the Trump boom. They're thriving, and it gives all these statistics about unemployment and such, and how that it's lower than it's been in decades. Well, he's fighting hard, holding firm, as it says, with border security, and that fight continues. And then there's been a record amount of American oil production. All that's happened just this year, and yet the other government, the unelected government, as far as what more you can expect for next year, you can expect the fight to intensify. And in a lot of ways, it's a huge distraction, because here in the States, well, that's all that people are concerned with. That's all. If they're into the news, it's just politics. And meanwhile, you have all of these other events, these prophetically significant events happening in the world. We'll conclude today's program with this end of the year montage, which, as you'll hear here, it begins with some of the things that have happened earlier on in this year, and then the ending. You have just a powerful conclusion about the oncoming Holy Roman Empire. Here's the montage.
I am announcing today that the United States will withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal.
Donald Trump has confirmed Europeans' worst nightmares. In fact, they were not expecting him to go this harsh. People had talked for weeks about a partial pullout, or perhaps Mr. Trump would be persuaded by the European offer to go tough on Iran. But actually, what he's done is wholesale.
President Trump's attempt to blow up the Iranian nuclear deal isn't foreign policy. It's vandalism.
President Trump and North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un finished an unprecedented meeting in Singapore with a deal to start denuclearizing the Korean Peninsula.
We're not looking up in the air. Any rockets up there? Any rockets? Japan is very happy. They haven't had a rocket shot over them in 7 months. There's been no rocket tests. There's been no nuclear tests. There's been no ballistic missiles. They've blown up their site. Today, it got no coverage because fake news doesn't cover it. But
a humanitarian crisis caused by Donald Trump using what many call child abuse as a tool of government policy. What's new tonight? The estimates that it's now nearly 2,000 migrant children ripped from their parents under these new orders from the Trump administration.
United States of America isn't Nazi Germany.
There's a chance the United States of 2017 ends up like Nazi Germany.
It's what the Nazis did. It's what slave owners did.
The idea was introduced earlier under the Obama administration, a solution suggested by the Department of Homeland Security in 2014 in response to the so-called American immigration crisis, a surge of arrivals from Central America.
It is my honor and privilege to announce that I will nominate Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the United States Supreme Court.
Democrats are willing to do anything and to hurt anyone to get their way, like they're doing with Judge Kavanaugh.
I believe Dr. Blasey Ford because she's telling the truth.
I believe Professor Ford.
But I believe her.
She really does have a ring of truth to it.
I believe Dr. Ford, the survivor. There's every reason to disbelieve Judge Kavanaugh after...
Told her truth, tell her truth, to tell her truth. Survivors of sexual violence are not opportunists, do not have political axes to grind, but are coming forward with courage and with heart to speak their truth to exist. And your brilliance shining light onto this, speaking your truth, is nothing short of heroic.
To confront senators.
So there were paid.
There were people who were paid by organizations like Ultraviolet to try to harness that energy in a way that would make the viral moments that we ended up seeing.
We were literally under assault. So there was a full-scale effort to intimidate as well as to eliminate fundamental notions of fairness and due process, such as the presumption of innocence.
The ayes are 50. The nays are 48. The nomination of Brett M. Kavanaugh of Maryland to be an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States is confirmed.
This started downhill very quickly on about July the 10th when Schumer said that we're going to do everything we can to stop this nomination. But what I've been dealing with since July the 10th, the downhill slope that Schumer's put us on, is really dealing with a demolition derby.
Breaking news, a heartbreaking day in Florida, and sadly an all too familiar one. 17 people are now confirmed dead. We know at least 3 people still in critical condition, after police say that a shooter believed to be just 19 years old opened fire at his former high school.
He eventually explains to the detective why he did what he did. The voice, the demon inside his head.
And what does the voice say to you? Well, what does it tell you to do?
Burn, kill, destroy.
Okay, burn, kill, destroy what?
Anything.
That deadly attack in Toronto, where a man drove his van onto a busy sidewalk in the middle of the day,
killing 10 people. Investigators in Toronto not ruling out terrorism.
A gunman opened fire on a busy street in Toronto late last night.
That left 2 people dead and 13 others wounded. However, this morning on official ISIS media, the terrorist organization claimed responsibility for the shooting.
Breaking news, a school shooting with reports of multiple fatalities, this time in Santa Fe, Texas.
On the day after the deadliest attack on the Jewish community in U.S. history, somber officials formally charged the man who murdered 11 people and injured six others at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh.
Those seeking their destruction, we will seek their destruction.
We have breaking news about that deadly mass shooting in a Southern California bar and country music venue. The Ventura County Sheriff says a gunman opened fire inside as it was crowded with more than 100 people. He killed 12 people.
The U.S. Eastern Seaboard is now feeling the wrath of Hurricane Florence.
The confirmed death toll from Hurricane Florence climbed to 35.
Huge swaths of the state are still underwater today. 1,200 roads remain closed. Interstate 40, a main east-west artery, looks more like a river.
Early estimates show this storm caused as much as $22 billion with a B in destruction. Now that would make it one of the 10 most costliest hurricanes in U.S. history.
Hurricane Michael, category 5 hurricane with winds at 155 miles per hour. That is several miles per hour shy of category 5.
Impossible to describe the destruction from Hurricane Michael here on Mexico Beach. There are some buildings still standing, others are completely destroyed.
Never before have they endured a category 4 hurricane, and keep in mind, this was nearly a category 5.
Hurricane Michael's quick and powerful strike came in with a roar, the most powerful storm to hit the United States in 50 years.
This community now filled with grim scenes like this. Cars gutted by walls of fire. In some cases, they became tombs for residents trying to escape. But as
and the human loss is now unmatched in the state.
The deadliest wildfire in the state's history. Officials say more than 600 people are still unaccounted for, and at least 66 people have been killed due to wildfires in California.
Earthquake in Alaska, striking just north of Anchorage, the state's largest city by far, with a population of about 300,000 people.
Fighting at the Gaza border after thousands of Palestinian protesters started throwing stones at Israeli troops.
Today, this is part of weeks of planned protests and events along the Israeli security border that Palestinian leaders have been calling for.
And actually, a number of efforts to try to cross the border from Gaza into Israel. So far, 5 people are dead, 1 person
killed. Heated clashes along Israel's border. The White House blamed Hamas, the radical group that runs Gaza, for the deadliest day of violence in nearly 4 years.
Overnight, Iranian forces in Syria launched at least 20 rockets on Israeli positions in the Golan Heights. But Israel's counterattack was unlike anything they've done in Syria so far. The Israeli military says it hit more than 50 Iranian targets within Syria.
It's believed to be the first time Iran's military has ever targeted Israel directly.
This morning, the Israel Defense Forces launched a campaign to expose and neutralize a network of terror tunnels on our northern border with Lebanon. These cross-border terror tunnels were built by Hezbollah with the direct support and funding from Iran.
1.8 meters high and several hundred meters long. Hezbollah tunnels dug from Lebanon unearthed for the first time.
And we have won against ISIS. We've beaten them, and we've beaten them badly. We've taken back the land, and now it's time for our troops to come back home.
This has taken the national security establishment off guard. This gives huge impetus to Iran to continue their presence in Syria. That would be a devastating blow to our allies in Israel. I don't understand where this is coming from.
UK Prime Minister Theresa May warning about the need to reach a deal on Brexit and do it fast.
This is a victory for the Prime Minister. Her cabinet has backed this draft agreement.
This is a decisive step which enables us to move on and finalise the deal in the days ahead. And I firmly believe that this is a decision which is in the best interests of our entire United Kingdom.
Well, what has been achieved today is not Brexit.
But this deal delivers what people voted for, and it is in the national interest.
It looks like the worst deal in history to me.
The Brexit Secretary, Dominic Raab, has resigned.
Another minister has quit the government over Theresa May's Brexit withdrawal agreement. The seventh minister now to resign over the deal.
May's government lost a vote on whether it was in contempt of Parliament.
It is, I think, unprecedented for this House to find government ministers in contempt.
From the UK, where a vote of no confidence has been triggered for the British Prime Minister.
British Prime Minister Theresa May is safe, at least for the moment. Just a few moments ago, May survived a no-confidence vote from her own party.
The President of France, Emmanuel Macron, will also meet with President Trump in Paris. Macron's calling for a new European army, pan-European army, to defend against Russia, China, and America?
New tension in a relationship that had been full of public displays of affection.
The United States can only do so much.
But President Trump bristled at Emmanuel Macron's recent suggestion that Europe needed its own army.
President Macron of France has just suggested that Europe build its own military in order to protect itself from the US, China, and Russia. Very insulting.
The German Chancellor Angela Merkel has used her Vision for Europe speech to the EU Parliament to call for the creation of a European army.
Jean-Claude Juncker.
The idea that this new militarized union is somehow a recipe for peace, I suggest you all sit back and think a little bit more carefully. Maybe you should all reread history. The European project was set up to stop German domination. What you've seen today is a naked takeover bid. It's a European Union that we're told is now to become an empire that tries to rewrite history. And I think 100 years on from the armistice, we should be genuinely worried.
And Europe right now is a great empire, even militarily. When you think about 10 kings or 10 nations that are going to come together and form the Holy Roman Empire, and now we already see one in Austria that has formed the Holy Roman Empire in its nation. The rule of the Holy Roman Empire. And here is another man coming along and said, well, we need to expand that. I'm telling you that this is the beginning, the great, almost you could say the official beginning of the Holy Roman Empire.